Mr. Davis for the appellant, Mr. Eichelberger for the respondent. Welcome to both of you.
Thank you, Jim.
And I'll give you a couple seconds to get set up. Sure, absolutely.
May it please the court, my name is Lee Davis. I represent Builders Insurance. I'm the appellate in this case. And I'd like to reserve 5 minutes. This case violates every notion of fundamental due process and fairness that I could think of. This is a administrative law officer, workers' comp judge decision where she finds that Becker General Contractor was liable for a workers' compensation claim. And also, she found that under Rule NRS 616C.165 that the insurance company liable for this claim, the insurance company who insures Becker General Contractor, has to reimburse ICON, the insurance company who paid the claim in the first place. And the statute, NRS 616C.165, specifically talks about an insurance company reimbursing the insurance company who previously paid the claim. The first time that my client, Builders Insurance, is involved in this case is when they receive a phone call from Phillips, the claimant, from his attorney, saying there's a decision out there that your insurer is responsible for a claim and you have to pay that claim. The decision also says you have to reimburse the previous insurance company too. My client says, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? Litigation? There was no claim ever filed. We never had a C-4 form. The employer never had notice, Becker Construction. What are you talking about? And that attorney sent the decision over to my client, and that's how I got involved. The claimant's attorney, Phillips, files a motion for sanctions against my client, trying to enforce the decision on a case that my client was never a party to. If you look at the decision on the CERTA mailing, there is no mention of Builders Insurance. If you read through the decision, Builders Insurance was never joined in. They were never a party. The theory to put liability on Becker General Contractors was under the last injurious exposure rule, finding that the last employer, Mr. Phillips' employment, somehow aggravated a prior industrial injury, so therefore Becker General Contractors responsible. But that theory also says that the insurance company is going to have to pay for Becker's claim. But more specifically, under NRS 616C165, the statute that says the insurance company has to pay, this appeals officer ordered that my client, Builders Insurance, the insurance company, has to pay somebody on a case that they were never a party to.
Well, let me ask you, Becker was served, and why didn't, what was the reason they didn't let their insurance company know that something was going on?
Becker owns a construction company. I talked to him, and in the motion for sanctions hearing in the transcript, I asked him questions. He said that I've always had people come to me, my employees come to me, and say, I hurt my arm, I hurt my back, I need to file a claim. They send him to the doctor, he gets notice. In this case, he said he worked for me for 3 months. He never said anything to me. Now, out of the blue, I'm told that now I could have a claim against me. There must have been a mistake. In fact, what he did is he wrote a letter to the employer's attorney and told him that and said, there's a mistake, and this is why I believe there's a mistake. A copy of that went to the appeals officer. But at the time of the last hearing, I think it was January 2004, they the appeals officer would not allow that letter from Becker in as evidence. She struck it. She allowed the letter to Becker Construction saying, you got to be here, but his response why he wasn't going to be here and why he felt that there was not a justified claim against him, that wasn't even allowed into evidence. That shows you how egregious the whole process was.
Well, I'm no expert on insurance, but what, the deal between Becker and Builders Insurance, didn't Becker have an obligation to Builders Insurance to do certain things to make this a viable claim that you would be covered?
Well, first of all, he said that he didn't think that there was any chance that this was going to be a claim against him. In fact, in the transcript, he said that if he thought there was a chance, he would have contacted the insurance company. Second of all, we didn't even get to look at the policy to see if there was a legal duty for him to tell the insurance company. But what is really important and what the appeals officer ignored was that this court has found in the Browning case that I cite in my briefs, that the employer and the insurance company are separate parties, separate entities. And many times, an employer will appeal an insurance company's determination. I had one last week where I represented the insurance company and the employer hired an attorney. And they were not very happy about me being there and arguing against them and beating them. But the point is that if you allow an employer, you give the employer the power to decide whether or not they're going to tell the insurance company, give them notice of something, that violates my client's fundamental due process rights. I mean, how do they get the power to decide? And then when you add the fact that they could be an adverse party, that makes it even more egregious.
Mr. Davis, what's your position on Judge Russell's reliance on NAD versus District Court, 115 Nevada 71?
You know, Judge, I think that he really missed the boat. I think really what he relied on more heavily was the statute that we're all talking about, the 616B statute, that says notice on the employer is notice on the insurance company. But if you look at that statute, the caption of that statute tells us that really is a defense for injured workers so that the insurance company can't say later on, you know what, you can't have a claim against me if I have a defense against the employer. And I had a case like that where the claimant is on a roof, falls off the roof, the employer, he allowed his insurance to lapse, so he doesn't tell the insurance company. Then after he gets the insurance, he starts paying the premiums again, he files a claim for the claimant, and he puts down that the date of injury was during the time that he was insured. So in that case, we had a defense against the employer because he had violated the insurance policy. That statute was used by the claimant and the appeals officer to say, no, Mr. Davis, you can't argue that that can't be a compensable claim. You may have a cause of action against the employer for breaching the insurance policy, but that in itself cannot be used to deny the claim of the injured worker.
Okay.
So you are ignoring what apparently the NAD case says in that, according to that case, if I'm understanding the holding correctly, the holding there was that an insurance carrier is an agent for the policyholder, and as such they have contracted away their rights for notice for purposes of litigation.
Okay, I don't think that is a specific, that case specifically applies to workers' compensation claims. And we have case law, and once again, the Browning case, where this court has held that the insurance company and the employer are two separate and distinct entities. That if the employer does not appeal a determination letter, well, first of all, they have appeal rights to contest an insurance company's determination. But second of all, the Browning case said that if the employer does not exercise their appeal rights, they can't later on come back and say that the insurance company did something wrong, that they have a separate duty to contest a determination letter, and that they are a separate entity from the insurance company.
Why didn't the insurance company then sue Becker for failing to do what probably the policy says about notification when they're served, or at least appearing at the hearing? I mean, Becker didn't even show up at the hearing.
Becker did not show up at the hearing because Becker wrote a letter saying, hi, I'm not an attorney, but this is why I think there should not be a claim against me.
Yeah, we deal with those type of letters all the time.
But I thought that wasn't part of the record.
That was marked at, and we talk about it throughout the transcripts. It's not actually admitted in where the appeals officer relied on it, but she did mark it as part of the record.
Mr. Davis, if I could shift gears slightly, because in the interest of time, on the if I'd like to know what your opinion is, the effect of 616C025 subsection 2B on the exception on failure to file the C4 notice. There's an exception for mistake or ignorance of the law. How does that play out into the procedural posture of the case?
Judge, right, I think that statute, what that statute was intended for is when an injured worker files a C4 late, the insurance company can't say it's past the 90 days. The claimant can say, well, I didn't understand, I didn't know the law.
So if it's not filed at all,
I don't think that's an excuse for not filing at all. And I think that's an important part in this case, because if the appeals officer, and this is what she should have done, she should have instructed Phillips to file a C4 and a C1 with both Apex Roofing and company they brought in, and also the Becker General Contractors, because then that claim would have been processed, determination letters would have been issued, and those matters could have all been consolidated at the appeals office level, and everybody would have had notice that there was a claim being filed against them. The way that it worked out was everyone found out, my client found out about it after the fact, even after the 33 days had run for me to file an appeal to district court, why I had to file a motion under Rule 60 to set aside the order and the decision.
You have 4 minutes left. You want to reserve your 4 minutes?
Thank you.
Mr. Eichelberger, on behalf of the respondent. I think you know the questions that you need to answer appellant has raised.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. I'm Todd Eichelberger from Employers Insurance Company of Nevada for the respondent. The main issue here that really needs to be addressed or needs to be kept in mind is that Mr. Becker was provided notice when he was joined in this matter. He did not do anything once that joinder happened. He didn't turn it over to his insurance company. Then, when it proceeded to hearing, which he was also noticed on, he didn't show up at that hearing as well. Then, further compounding it, when a decision was actually issued which held him liable for the industrial workers' compensation benefits, he still failed to turn that over to his insurance company. Based on all of that, it is Becker's responsibility in this matter that has caused us to be where we are today, not any other party in the matter. Now, it's the appellant's position that all the other parties should have somehow found out who that insurer was of Becker's when Becker never came into the matter at all or appeared at all, and it was all their responsibility to notice the insurer. However, under NRS 616C033, we do have Section 5, which is Part B of that, is that jurisdiction over the employer is jurisdiction over the insurer, and under Part C, the insurer is bound by and subject to any judgments, findings of fact, conclusions of law, awards, decrees, orders, or decisions rendered against the employer in the same manner and to the same extent as the employer. There's been no argument and no evidence that once the appeals officer assumed jurisdiction over Becker, which happened when she joined Becker, that under this statute that did then confer jurisdiction over their then unknown insurer. Then, when it proceeded to hearing, one would have expected that Becker would either show up at that hearing and provide a defense or have informed their insurance company that this matter was proceeding. No one appeared. At this point, there was no way for any of the parties to know who this unknown insurance company was. That's exactly why in Section 616B, it does talk about the rights and responsibilities between an employer and an insurance company. And under this statute, 616B, 033 specifically, in the beginning of the statute is titled, "The default of the employer does not relieve the insurer from liability. Effective statements contained in application for policy, notification of employer of cancellation of policy, defense based on act or omission of insured employer may not be raised by insurer against the claimant, and the insurer is placed in a position of the employer under certain circumstances." Now, under that statute, it doesn't say only in the event where their policy coverage may have lapsed do these provisions apply. Specifically under Part 5, it says, for the purposes of Chapters 616A to 617 inclusive of the NRSs. Based on that, it could have actually read, if you take appellant's argument to its extent, it could have read, in cases where coverage has lapsed or there's an argument over coverage between them, these provisions will apply. It doesn't. It specifically says, for purposes of chapters 616A to 617. Now, this whole statute and this whole section are predicated on differences between the employer and the insurance their insurance company. Under those situations where there is some kind of dispute between the employer and the insurance company, what this statute is seeking to do is to make sure that the injured worker is the one that still receives benefits from the insurance company while the insurer and their employer, or I'm sorry, while the insurer and their insured work out their difficulties. In this case, I would argue that the difficulty here is that the employer failed to provide notice to their insurance company. They failed to turn over this claim and they failed to tender this claim. What also needs to be kept in mind is that the underlying matter here was that Mr. Phillips was seeking to obtain industrial benefits. Mr. Phillips filed his claim, which was denied. Once that matter went to hearing, it was determined during that hearing that he had subsequent employers whose work may have impacted on his industrial injury. At that point, they properly joined Becker, and again, as I've pointed out, Becker never responded to any of these issues, and therefore, no one knew who Becker's insurance company was to join them in the matter. Specifically, under the statute that I've referenced, that once the decision did come out by the appeals officer, the insurer was then bound and subject to that jurisdiction. The employer insurer has a problem with the fact that they weren't notified. Their recourse would lie either with their either under the contract with their insured or what other remedies it may have at law against the employer. The employer here is the one who did the wrong in not turning it over. Based on all that, I would ask that the appeals officer's decision to deny the motion to set aside the judgment be overturned. And if there are any questions, I'd be happy.
What about the C-4 form, the failure to file it?
Yes, the C-4 form, in the normal course of a case, he would file, or an injured worker would file a C-4 form with their employer. In this case, Mr. Phillips did file that with what he thought was the employer who would be responsible for his injury. Once it was determined at hearing that there was potentially another insurer that would be responsible, that's where the last injurious exposure rule comes along. There's no, under the statute, there it really isn't a requirement then that Mr. Phillips decide, oh, okay, I'm going to decide that it was this insurance company, or I'm sorry, this employer where I injured myself. He knows he was injured. He knows who he was working for. He did file the original C-4. Now, the excuse provision that is contained in 616C025 does allow that provision, the 90-day requirement to file the claim with the insurer, to be overridden in the case where there is a mistake of law or fact. Clearly, in this case, Mr. Phillips, who is the injured worker, was unaware of the law, was unaware that a subsequent employer could bear liability for this. He filed his claim against the employer that he believed was responsible.
What was the finding by the appeals officer on the C-4 issue? Was that raised?
I don't believe that was even raised because the only person who was present was the previous employer, Fletcher Roofing.
And they never raised anything because they had received the C-4.
Correct.
Any further questions by Justice Gibbons or Justice Sada?
Thank you, Your Honor.
Judge, that's the very point. The party that would be arguing that the C-4 was never completed, the C-4 would have given notice to Builders Insurance, is Builders Insurance. We were never a party. We were never given the opportunity to make that argument. And as I indicated before, the decision specifically says that Builders Insurance has to pay back ICON. So we have a decision that says that our insured is responsible, so we have to pay. And then the decision also says that in addition to that, we also have to pay back, as if we were a party to the litigation, we have to pay back ICON. And we had no opportunity to even argue that. A couple of points. The argument is that they didn't know who the insurance company for Becker was. It wouldn't have taken a whole lot of time to figure that out. At that point, all you had to do was make one phone call to the Department of Insurance, and they had a person there who took those phone calls and looked it up on the computer. Nowadays, you can just go on the internet site and it'll tell you. But at that point, all you had to do was make one phone call. It wasn't that big of a deal. It's just nobody wanted to do that because they didn't want to have an insurance company's attorney to come in and stir everything up. They wanted everything to be smooth, and they didn't want someone to be there to represent that party's interest. In addition, The statute that is being argued over and over and over again, the 616B.033 statute, that was never intended to eliminate a party's fundamental due process rights. If you read through the statute, I think it's clear what it means. And what it means is that this is a defense for claimants so that claimants cannot have their claim denied because there's an issue between the insurance company and the employer. What I'd like to propose to this court is, what would have happened if, instead of the insurance company not getting notice, the claimant didn't get notice? Let's say that a determination letter was issued and it accepted the claim. The employer did not agree with that, so the employer appealed that to the hearing officer. The injured worker did not receive notice of the hearing date, doesn't show up. The employer wins because the injured worker is not there to prove his or her case. The decision goes out that the employer wins and the claim is a denied claim. The claimant doesn't receive the decision because they never received the notice in the first place, or the notice never went out to them. And then months later, they receive a bill from a doctor's office saying, you have to pay this. They call the insurance company. They say, what happened? And the insurance company says, oh, well, there was a hearing and you weren't there, and now your claim's denied. And the claimant would say, that's not fair because I had an interest in that hearing. I didn't have an opportunity to exercise that interest. And I lost my fundamental due process right to argue at that hearing. The insurance company would say, oh, that's too bad. That's exactly what's going on in this case. That's exactly what the appeals officer is saying in this case. Oh, it's just too bad that we didn't have you involved. It would have been a clerical nightmare. There's a statute that we can hang our hat on. And by the way, I have a decision which says that you have to do something, and if you don't want to do it, I'm going to find that you're in contempt, and I'm going to certify it to district court. Once again, that's how my client got involved, with a phone call and a motion threatening them with sanctions. That violates every notion of fundamental due process, every notion of fundamental fairness. All I'm asking for in this case is that this court recognizes that my client never received notice, never had the opportunity to defend their rights under Rule 19. They should have been brought in. They weren't. And I'm asking that this court remand the matter back to the appeals officer so that my client can, for once, have their day in court. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks to both counsel for their argument in this matter and their briefs. This matter will stand submitted and will be in recess.